Welcome to the podcast that helps you build wealth and thrive in a world of out-of-control central banks and big governments. This is the Rebel Capitalist Show.
Hello, fellow Rebel Capitalists. Hope you're well. And I also hope you're enjoying your Sunday and your weekend. I had a great day today. It was a great morning. Played golf with UFC superstar Michael Chandler. A great day. I was out there with Kenny McElroy and one of his buddies. Mike's also a real estate guy. And just a really fun day on the links. And if you're a UFC fan like I am, make sure you support Michael because he's just a great guy. Super, super cool dude. And just a person you'd really want to root for, you know, really down to earth. Okay, one thing I wanted to go over, make sure, guys, you got your tickets to Rebel Capitalist Live. That is Miami, June 24th through the 26th. It's going to be absolutely amazing. Get your tickets at rebelcapitalistlive.com. It's not just about the speakers. It's about networking and hanging out with your fellow Rebel Capitalists in a time when we are going into potentially a recession, when the Fed is trying to talk down the stock market, when there are geopolitical risks. And if there's ever a time when you should be paying attention to your portfolio and educating yourself and being cognizant of the world around you and trying to improve your network and your community, it's definitely right time, right now. You know, I was having dinner last night and I had it with a couple gentlemen and they asked me if I ever thought when I was growing up, like in the, you know, I was 15 in the late 80s or early 90s, something like that, that the United States would ever look like it does right now. And my response was, I didn't think the United States would look like it does right now in 2015, let alone when I was 15. I didn't think it looked like it is. I never thought it would look like it looks today in 2019, for heaven's sakes. So whether it's coming to Rebel Capitalist Live or doing something else, make sure that you are proactively educating yourself, really building your network and building a community of like-minded individuals around you, because we're going into some tumultuous times. That's for sure. It's not a matter of if, it's a matter of when. And that's how you're not only going to survive, but really thrive. The one good thing about going into a deleveraging, you want to use Chris Cole's term, whether that's a deflationary deleveraging, an inflationary deleveraging, is it creates a tremendous amount of opportunities. Where there are crises, there are also opportunities. You just have to be positioned to take advantage of those. And that's exactly what we're going to be talking about at Rebel Capitalist Live. So get your tickets at rebelcapitalistlive.com. Okay, into the questions. What do we got for today? What are your thoughts on buying small multifamily property and live and rent? I like this a lot. I really like this. I understand that real estate's in a bubble. I've said that until I'm blue in the face. And I don't like buying things when they are expensive. I like buying things when they are cheap. But this is a little different because I think the investment here is the fact that you're able to use someone else's money to cover your living expenses. And then you can take what you would have spent on rent or your mortgage and allocate it to investing in things that are cheap. And then if you could do that with a 30-year fixed rate loan and you've got some positive cash flow there, assuming it's like a triplex or something like that, I think that's great. I would make sure that you go into it understanding that you could take a drawdown of 50% on the equity. And assuming you're okay with that, and everything else pencils out, then I would definitely consider it. But you got to make sure that you're considering the 30-year fixed rate debt and the purchasing power that you'll most likely gain having that on your balance sheet. And then you've got to take into consideration all the money you'll be able to allocate that you're not spending on rent. Most people don't know this, but usually your biggest cost outside of taxes and getting a divorce, but your biggest cost or expense is putting a roof over your head. So if you could just take that money and save it and invest it, you know, assuming you're a young guy, let's say you're 30 years old, by the time you get to 50, that's a good chunk of change. And then your renters basically have purchased the property for you. So in 20 years down the road, who cares if it goes down by 50%, 40%, if it, and who even cares if it comes back up? It doesn't even matter. It's like owning a McDonald's, because now all of a sudden you've got the cash flow. And if you've got that cash flow coming in, you own the property outright, let's say in 20 or 30 years. And now all of a sudden it's just a stream of income. You never want to sell. So who cares what's happening to the nominal price? I think it's a very, especially for a young person, I think this is probably the smartest financial decision they could make, is buy a triplex, live in one unit, rent out the other two. But just make sure you're using fixed rate debt. Make sure you got positive cash flow. Make sure it's not in a bad neighborhood. Make sure it's in a good neighborhood, good school district. And then, you know, I can't give you any investment advice, but if I was talking, if 49-year-old George Gammon was talking to 22-year-old George Gammon, that's exactly what I'd tell myself. George, you mentioned using watch lists as monitor commodities. What watch list tools? Oh, I don't, just a piece of paper. That's about as technical as I get. just my head and just my notepad. And I've got some in my phone, basically, that I just save, you know. But really, I just, this notepad, actually, I always use these legal pads. So all my whiteboard videos and all this stuff and everything I'm talking about, it's always on a pad like this. But as far as that watch, it's pretty much in my head and just some notes I've got on my phone. I always use that note thing. It's actually, I'm sure you guys are going to laugh at me because it's about as technical as I get. But this note thing right here, that note app, and for me, this is very, very useful. Because if I'm hiking, if I'm out, even on the golf course, or, you know, if I'm out by myself thinking, if I'm jogging, if I'm at the gym, or if I'm up hiking Squaw Peak, which is something I like to do often when I'm in Phoenix, I'll have an idea come into my head. And before I forget, I just go right to the notes and do like a voice memo on the notes. And I've just got a list of all these things. And then when I get a little time, I'll go through that list and just read the voice notes that I haven't written down, but I've told myself. And that's a great source for whiteboard videos. I'm doing a presentation at Kenny's event this weekend, Limitless. So it's always just jotting down ideas. That's probably the best little tool that I have. And not that it's techie. I'm sure every single person on the live stream right now has that. But maybe you don't utilize it like that, where you're just, you know, jogging or something, and just tell yourself something, let it go, and then just go over it maybe once every 2 weeks. What do I think about synthetic CDOs and the fact there is hundreds of billions now betting on corporate defaults? Well, I think it's a sign of the times. I think, I mean, it really, I go even more macro than that. I look at the euro dollar system, and it definitely broke in 2007. It's never been fixed. I've gone over this in a couple live streams lately, where you just look at the reserve, the bank reserves on the Fed's balance sheet, and it's obvious. I mean, 1987, you had 60 billion in reserves. 2007, you had 40, so a decrease of 20 billion between 1987 and 2007. And then right after QE goes straight to 3 trillion, we're up over 4 trillion. And basically what happened is the Fed's balance sheet picked up the slack for the euro dollar system breaking. But it, of course, doesn't function nearly as well or efficiently as the euro dollar system did when it was running on all 8 cylinders. And this is why you see global economic growth declining. And what I'm getting at here, too, is that a lot of the derivatives and basically the bank's balance sheets are dependent, I think that's the best word, on collateral. And now they don't really have, they have the mortgage-backed security collateral, but no one really likes to use it. They use T-bills. So it puts you into this weird position where if the Fed's doing quantitative easing to prop up the markets, they're taking collateral out of the system. If interest rates go up, that decreases the amount of collateral in the system, not the number of units, but the price of those units. Therefore, you need more of the units for the same liquidity needs. And with our economy, we need that liquidity growing, unfortunately. So I think it all ties in together, but yeah, I think that's a great thing to point out. I think it's kind of a canary in the coal mine, if you will, indicating that there's a lot of bets with smart money for the economy going through some tough times. And I would also add to this the options on Eurodollar futures, where they're predicting the Fed will take rates negative, not just lower rates, but take rates negative. Price on those has really spiked, and that would be consistent with what you're pointing out here. What do you think your social my social credit score is? Oh, what's the lowest score possible? I mean, what do you think you're, and do you think you ever think about this will affect you in the future? I'm sure it'll affect me. I think we'll all have a social, I mean, you kind of already do have a social credit score, because look at all the people that get fired from their jobs because of something they say on Twitter or something they say on social media or Facebook. I mean, isn't that kind of a social credit score where you say one thing and your score goes down to whatever number, whatever number is necessary for you to be fired from your job? And that's in a way the same thing, right? We're doxing people. I mean, some people were trying to dehumanize. I mean, look at what Trudeau did to the truckers. That's, what's the difference between that and a social credit score? Saying, oh, you're doing something I don't like, and therefore we're just going to seize your bank account, or we're going to freeze your bank account. Okay, well, would it be any different if they just had a score and Trudeau said, okay, well, I'm giving you 10 demerits on your score. You go from a 10 to a zero, and whoever has a zero, we freeze their bank account. I mean, it's kind of the same thing. So I think it'll affect me, but I don't think it will really impact my life. That's probably a better way of saying it. And it's very sad, because in the future, in my opinion, it's going to be, and I hate to even say it, but the rich, the people who have financial resources, are the ones that are going to have the most freedom. Terrible, but you're just going to be able to buy your way out of the insanity. And I don't have a lot of money, but I was able to retire at the age of 38 years old and not have to worry about working again. And I have resources to where I can, I mean, the cerveza sickness was a great example. Most of you know I got locked down in Colombia. I wanted nothing to do with that. So I got a humanitarian flight out, went to Fort Lauderdale, and I just kind of text a lot of friends and tried to find some place that was normal. And I was able to find St. Bart's. And so I went to St. Bart's for probably 2 or 3 months. Most people wouldn't be able to do that. And if you guys have ever been to St. Bart's, you know how expensive it is there. And it's not just the travel, but once you're there, you're spending, I mean, minimum $20,000 a month is your overhead to just survive in St. Bart's. Most people can't do that. And then I was able to get all these crazy flights from Fort Lauderdale to the Virgin Islands and over to Puerto Rico, then take a Tradewinds flight to St. Bart's and do all these things. And I mean, again, in the future, I think to even have the same type of freedoms that we all enjoyed in 2019, you're going to have to be rich. It's horrible, horrible. And I think it's going to lead to social unrest. I think it's going to lead to problems. I think this is the fourth turning. I mean, we're seeing it play out right in front of our eyes. And I've said this before, and I hope I'm wrong, and this is not a prediction, but I think this is worth thinking about. Fourth turning always ends in a war. I think this time it might end in a war, not between the U.S. and Russia, or the South and the North, the Republicans and the Democrats. It might end in a war between the elite and the rest of us. We'll have to see. But if I was anyone right now, I would have an extreme sense of urgency to become as financially secure as possible going into the next few years, because I think that's that's not the only way out, but that's going to be one of the ways out. I think education, network, community is probably an even bigger resource than the financial wherewithal that I was referring to. But ideally, you're going to have all those things. So it's not the early 1980s anymore, when you can just buy the long bond and just relax. And we're decreasing government spending was going up, or decreasing regulation. The economy was doing well. And it's a much different world today. And unfortunately, that's just the hand we have all been dealt, that we live in this world at this time. And I think it's a great time to be alive, but you have to be a lot more aware. You can't just float through life with your head in the sand, just going to work every day, doing a good job like you could in the 1980s and 1990s, and just come out ahead. You're going to have to do a lot more of that. It's going to take a lot more work for you to maintain and improve your quality of life moving forward. I think that's really what I'm trying to say. Why don't you mention, folks, your other channel, More George Gammon? Oh, well, thank you very much. I honestly don't really think about that channel. My editors kind of handle that. I should pay more attention to it because it's just clips from these long interviews that I do. And I think that's one of my objectives for the end of, or going into the latter parts of 2022, is to pay more attention to that. Because I think those long interviews are great, but if I could break them down by topic, that would be, a lot of people would prefer consuming the content that way. So definitely on the to-do list. Thank you for bringing that up. Do all Americans now have an account at the Fed? No, but if we have UBI, they would, or whoever would get the UBI in order to do that, assuming this is a central bank digital currency we're talking about, you would have to have an account with the Fed. But as of right now, no. No one has an account with the Fed other than the big banks, of course, and Fannie Freddie, maybe some dealers, but that's pretty much it. Just strictly financial institutions. Do you think we are in more of a crash in transactions than prices in real estate? That's an interesting concept. So the amount of transactions are going to plummet, but prices, I don't know. That's a good question. I could see where we would run into, I could see how that would play out, Keith, because we're getting to a point where homes are just unaffordable for more and more and more people, especially if we have mortgage rates going up. And I've actually gone on a whiteboard video, you guys might have seen it. I outlined how mortgage rates could actually go up even if the Fed is lowering rates, or let's just say pausing. Mortgage rates can still go up, especially if the Fed is not buying them. If they're not buying those mortgage-backed securities, and those mortgages have to be absorbed by the private sector, you could see rates go from, what are they now in the 30-year fix? Maybe 5.2. I mean, you could see 6, 7, 8, easy. Easy. And how on earth are these kids that are just saddled with student loan debt going to be able to afford a house with these astronomical prices and 8% mortgage rates if that comes to fruition? And again, even if the Fed isn't raising rates, there's still a path where rates can get that high if all those mortgages are absorbed by the private sector. So that definitely reduces transactions for sure. And you say, well, nominal prices come down. I don't know. It depends on the supply. If no one's selling, I mean, take it to an extreme. Let's just say that there's 500,000 homes for sale at any given time in the United States. We have about 100 million homes, 150 million homes in, as far as total housing stock. I mean, if no one's selling, what happens if there's 10 houses that are for sale? Just taking it to an extreme. Well, you know, if there's no one selling, no transactions, that's going to crash, but that doesn't necessarily mean that prices come down. So there's a lot of dynamics in there. But I think from a standpoint of transactions, I do see how it would be significantly reduced in months and years to come. Now, then you got to ask yourself, you know, if interest rates are at, if the 10-year is at 6 or 7%, now are all these private equity funds selling? Because that could bring some supply, that could potentially bring prices down with the number of transactions increase. A lot of variables right now in the housing market. Hey guys, I want to remind you to get your tickets to Rebel Capitalist Live. This is the live conference I do twice per year with all of your favorite speakers from the Rebel Capitalist show and experts in investing, commodities, real estate, freedom, and liberty. All of your favorite topics, all of your favorite speakers. The next Rebel Capitalist Live is going to be in Miami, and tickets increase in price as we get closer to the event. So go to RebelCapitalistLive.com right now to get your tickets to the next Rebel Capitalist Live. It's the conference you cannot afford to miss. It'll help you increase your financial freedom and, more importantly, your personal freedom. You'll get intel that you won't hear anywhere else. Past speakers have included icons in macroeconomics, investing, and personal freedom and liberty. People like Dr. Ron Paul, Robert Kiyosaki, Brent Johnson, Lynn Alden, Jeff Snyder, Richard Werner, Mark Moss, Lynette Zhang, and Robert Breedlove, just to name a few. So once again, go to Rebel Capitalist Live right now and get your tickets today. I believe there's so much cancer in our current government. Civil war is our only answer. The rest of the whole system, I think it can be peaceful. What are your thoughts? I mean, I don't know that there's that the politicians we have now are any worse or better than they ever. I mean, politicians have always been terrible. I mean, look at Woodrow Wilson, for heaven's sakes. The guy was a eugenicist. Can we get any worse than that? I mean, we've got FDR. Can you get any worse than FDR? I guess Biden, from a cognitive standpoint, maybe an ethical standpoint, maybe they had better ethics back then, as far as FDR. But as far as his policies, just as bad as Biden. I mean, they're terrible. I think you can definitely have a new system. You can definitely get to a better place. We can definitely improve the economy and society at large without a civil war. That said, when you're going into a fourth turning, the probability is high that it ends in war. Doesn't necessarily have to be a civil war. I see a way that it could be peaceful. I just don't know how to give you any odds. I don't know how to say, okay, the probabilities of X, Y, and Z or this, this, and this. So you can use that to make better decisions. I think everything's on the table right now. There are things in 2019 that even me, I never would have considered. But after the Cerveza sickness and the global lockdowns and these politicians and global elite just basically locking you in a cage for 6 months, sometimes longer, I think after that, I mean, that happened. I mean, sometimes I still have to like pinch myself and remind myself that wasn't a nightmare. That actually happened. So if that can happen, who's to say that a civil war can't? When in 2019, you said, oh, there's no way. You know, 0.00001% probability. Now, I don't think that Klaus being a reptilian is a low probability. I think everything's on the table now. Just give me your conspiracy theories. Yeah, let's go over all of them. But exactly what I was talking about at the beginning of the live stream, how we've got to hope for the best, but prepare for the worst. And I think now more than ever, you got to have a plan B, for heaven's sakes. And you've got to build up that community. You've got to educate yourself. You've got to open your eyes. You've got to take that economic red pill, if you will, and try to get as many people as you can around you to do the same. Because the good news, Peter, is we have the power to affect change. If you look at how the Soviet Union came down, it was from people just standing up and pushing back that were sick and tired of it. They were fed up. And you get one person going out to the street and protesting, that turns into 100, that turns into 1,000, that turns into 10,000, that turns into 100,000. And then the dictator comes out and starts having his police shoot everybody. And instead of people going back to their houses in fear, it just provokes more people. And they come out and protest to get to a point where it's completely unmanageable. Because at the end of the day, there are far more of us than there is of them. We always have to remember that. Far more. You know, another, and I was using the specific example of Romania, where that happened. You know, just a few people go out, then bigger protest, bigger protest, bigger protest. 9 days later, the dictator's dead. They just took him in the back and shot him. And this is a guy that had complete and total power and control of the entire country for, I don't know how long, probably decades. So I always use the example of Phoenix because it's an area I know well in the United States. You go back to the Cerveza sickness, and you know, people talk about how important gun laws are or owning a gun, and I completely agree. But having a majority of people all seeing eye to eye that are fed up and are willing to push back, that's even more powerful. Because if we go back to 2020 and the lockdowns, if you had had 1,000 people in Phoenix, there's about 4 million people here. If you had 1,000 people go out with their guns and say, no, government, you've gone too far. We're not going to take this. They would have gotten destroyed. The army would have gone out there and they would have been completely wiped out. Done. But if, let's say, 3 million of the 4 million people without guns, no guns, would have gone outside and said, no, we're not playing by your rules. You have gone too far. We are not going to lock ourselves in a cage. We're going to go outside. We're going to open our business. We're going to go to the gym. I'm going to walk my dog. And if any of you police or military or government officials want to stand in my way, you're going to have to deal with 3 million people out on the streets protesting, which would have created change faster. Obviously, it's the 3 million people compared to a group of people with guns to defend themselves against a tyrannical government. So at the end of the day, we have the power to stop this. It's up to us. And that's encouraging. We just have to make sure that enough people's eyes are open to what is happening. And I think, you know, you let the truth give it some sunshine, and enough people will put their foot down and hopefully get us off this road to serfdom. And on the Rebel Capitalist channel, I've been doing a few videos lately, and I've been really encouraged regarding the number of people that are kind of in the mainstream, or more so in the mainstream, but have these huge audiences that are now really, really pushing back against the global elite, Klaus, the World Economic Forum, the IMF, the WHO, you know, all of these groups that as rebel capitalists we've been talking about for a long, long time. Now you've got people like Joe Rogan talking about it. You've got people like Russell Brand talking about it. You've got Ben Shapiro coming out and talking about it. That's great news. That is very encouraging. If you're someone that values freedom, liberty, and free market capitalism, it's not just us, you know, everyone calling us a tinfoil hatter, like back in 2019 and the beginning of 2020. You know, now the tinfoil hatters have gone mainstream, if you will. And I can only do so much. But when you get people, again, like Shapiro, Russell Brand, Rogan, talking about these things that are immensely important, it just opens up the masses' eyes. And it allows us to leverage the power of numbers. And so this is the kind of the balancing act, right? Are we going to win? Are they going to win? It depends on the efforts of the people that are in the alternative media space. And it depends on people's willingness to take action. We'll see. But I think there's a lot of room for optimism, even though the underlying fundamentals are extremely poor, and even though we're going into what will most likely be a very tumultuous time as a result of fourth turning, or you know, however you want to look at it, debt deleveraging, those things usually don't end well. But again, I want to be very, very clear. Crisis situation always offers up a tremendous amount of opportunity for those who are prepared. Do I believe hard money standard is possible? Do you agree with Jeff Snyder that money supply needs to grow? So it's ideal, or it's suboptimal, let me put it this way, for the money supply to be inelastic. And I don't know that it's even possible, because even if you're on a Bitcoin standard, they're going to grow the money supply. You got it. So let's back up here a moment, because I know a lot of Bitcoiners say, oh, well, all we need to do is be on a Bitcoin standard. and we're good to go. You can't grow the money supply there, George. I said, well, yeah, you can. You can have fractional reserve banking with that. Why couldn't they create IOUs for Bitcoin? Oh, well, they're never going to do that because the world is going to wake up to the downside of fractional reserve banking. The world's going to wake up and they're going to value sound money once again. And Bitcoin is going to be our savior. So we're never, ever, ever going to do that fractional reserve banking because we have Bitcoin now. And the world's changed. It's opened up people's eyes. Come on. This is that I'm a big fan of Bitcoin philosophically. I think everyone should own it to have some purchasing power outside the banking system. I wouldn't buy now. I'd wait till some more panic long term, bullish on the price. But as far as Bitcoin changing human nature, forget about it. Forget it. And let's go back to 1944 in Bretton Woods. How did we get the euro dollar system? Why was the euro dollar system created? Because they couldn't expand the money supply fast enough for these economies to grow on all eight cylinders. So what do you get? You get the euro dollar system. Now, was that planned? Did the central planners give that their stamp of approval? No. Nope. It just sprung up because there was a need for additional capital denominated in dollars. So the bank said, okay, we'll make it happen. And everyone started accepting it as though it was good as gold. And as long as you accept it, I accept it, that's all we really need. So why should we expect the same system wouldn't sprout up if Bitcoin was base money? Of course it would. Of course it would. So I think there is no perfect system, but ideally you would have, in my opinion, or the best of the worst, let me put it that way, is just free banking. So gold is your base money, Bitcoin is your base money, whatever. And let the people do whatever they want with it. If they want to store their Bitcoin themselves, or if they want to give it to a money manager or a quote unquote bank, and they could lend it out with fractional reserve and then give them a higher return than they could otherwise get, so be it. I think the system would work itself out. Just get the government and the central bank out of the system and let it do what it wants to do. And a lot of the people go back to the 1800s and say, oh, look at how great deflation was. Very, very true. But let's remember, we had fractional reserve banking. In the 1800s, from 1800 to 1900, prices went down in the United States by 50%, 50. And we had fractional reserve banking. So how does that happen? You're increasing the money supply. You have elastic money. So how do we have deflation? Because you get the government out of it. You don't do bailouts. The banks who are creating the additional dollars are having to keep those loans on their balance sheet. Therefore, they are incentivized to lend productively. Imagine that. What a system, right? So if they're lending productively, they're lending not exclusively for people to buy houses and cars and credit cards and go on vacation. No. The most of their lending is for businesses to produce more stuff. And if businesses are producing more stuff, then the amount of goods and services are increasing at a rate faster than the increase of money supply, you have prices go down. So this is, in my opinion, because there's a lot of downside to having a set number of currency units. I mean, that would be, boy, you want to talk about stunting global growth. That would definitely do it. Now you'd eliminate the business cycle. So it's definitely a cost-benefit analysis for sure. But there is no perfect system. I think the best that we have as imperfect human beings in an imperfect world is where you've got a solid base money like gold or maybe Bitcoin, and then you just let the free market work. And I guarantee you, they're going to use fractional reserve banking. But if the government isn't stepping in, bailing them out, if the government isn't buying this debt, then we're going to have a system, again, similar to what we saw in the 1800s, where the free market just naturally brings prices down, which increases the standard of living for the poor and middle class. Let's see, this person talking about a personal conversation. No, unfortunately, I used to do, or I've done a couple of the consultations, And I just don't have the time to do that anymore. So I apologize. Have you ever dabbled in the tax lien or dabbled in back tax or lien property? Yeah. So Rick, that's the very first thing that I did when I got into real estate investing is I bought properties that were foreclosed on by the city. I think the city is who did it. Yeah. So, or maybe it was the county. Now it was either the city or the county. And where I was doing business, this was in Kansas City on the Missouri side. So each little municipality would, if someone was like 3 years late on their taxes, they'd foreclose on them basically. And they'd sell their house on the courthouse steps and you'd buy it, you'd get the title. And a lot of times you'd have to kick the people out of their own house, which isn't fun. But yeah, that's, in fact, the very first homes I purchased were homes from the local government that had, where they foreclosed on them. This was 2012. In fact, August of 2012, the very first, I'd never owned a house in my life ever, not as a property, not as someplace to live. And the very first day at the tax auction in August of 2012, I bought six houses. The first day of a baptism by fire. So yes, I have done that. Where outside of the US are you looking to invest in real estate? I know you mentioned Montenegro, Colombia. Okay, so I'm not putting any more money to work in Colombia. I think, I don't know if they had the election the other day with that crazy guy. I know he is in the lead. And I don't like that. I love Colombia. I mean, I'm always going to spend time there, but I prefer to spend time there as a tourist. And I have a lot of money in Colombia, so I don't want to put any more money to work there. I'm fine with what I have. Other countries would be Turkey, not pulling the trigger yet. I'm waiting for a catalyst like Jim Rogers. I know the prices have gone up even in dollar terms quite significantly, but that's a place that's on my watch list. Dubai, another place on my watch list. Those prices got pretty cheap. I know they've come up a lot over the last year, but I could be bullish. I need to go there and do some boots on the ground research. But as far as globally, the two places that I would be most excited about real estate right now, that would be that those two places would be at the top of the list. So Turkey, Istanbul, and Dubai. What happened to the economy if the Fed sold off its balance sheet while keeping interest rates low? Sure, that's totally possible to do quantitative tightening while they're keeping interest rates low. Most likely, I mean, who knows what would happen. But if you look at the Fed's balance sheet, there's a strong correlation with the S&P 500. So as the Fed does more QE, oddly enough, it usually doesn't bring down rates at the long end of the curve. Often it does the opposite. So it's counterintuitive because most people think that if the Fed's doing quantitative easing, if they're buying bonds, increases demand, therefore the interest rates go down. But historically, what we've seen is when the Fed is doing QE, usually rates are going up. Once they start doing QT, rates go down, which is the opposite of what you would think. So now, will that continue into the future? I don't know. I think the Fed's taken their, they haven't reduced their balance sheet. So we'll have to see what would happen to rates then once they start doing QT. But my point is the stock market has really followed the Fed's balance sheet to a large degree. So they start, let's say they keep rates low, but they start doing QT, that brings down the stock market even further. If the past is any indication, because the Fed's reducing the size of their balance sheet, therefore you would assume the S&P 500 to do the same. And I think that's, they can't raise it too far because it completely crushes the economy because the debt load is so high. You can't increase interest rates too much if the entire economy is dependent on low interest rates, which is basically the position we're in right now. But you can do QT and they may give it a shot. I mean, right now they're bringing the stock market down by just expectations policy, by just talking tough. And I always say that Jerome Powell likes to talk as if he's Paul Volcker. But if you look at his actions, they're more like Ben Bernanke or Janet Yellen, where he talks very hawkish, but his actions are very dovish. And you say, oh, George, well, he's raised rates 75 basis points. Oh, wow. Yeah. Whew. 75 basis points. Incredible. When the headline CPI is 8.3%. So that still gives us negative real interest rates. They call it 7.5%. Those that might be the actually, no, it's not the most, but it would be right up there with one of the most extreme times in our history in the United States for negative real interest rates. The most probably would have been in the 1940s. But outside of the 1940s, I don't know when we had higher negative real interest rates than right now. So, and that makes a lot of sense because the Fed knows they can't raise rates too much, but what they can do is sit there and talk tough so the market comes down in an effort to bring aggregate demand down because they know so much of the U.S. purchasing power is dependent on asset bubbles. So you bring that aggregate demand down and hopefully that brings down the CPI, headline CPI, to a politically palatable level. In my opinion, this is their game plan. But my point is, yeah, if that's not working enough, that could be plan B, where if the talk isn't bringing down the market, well, let's just do QT because we sure as hell can't raise rates. Or at least when I say raise rates, they might be able to raise another 25, 50 basis points, you know, maybe 75, but I'm talking about normalizing rates, taking Fed funds back up to 4 or 5%. Is there any light at the end of the tunnel? Absolutely. Absolutely. And it just really revolves around what I was just saying, that there's more of us than there is of them. And you may look at this and say, oh my gosh, the global elite, they're so powerful. The Davos types, the UN Klaus, Great Reset agenda. And listen, I get it. I'm right there with you. But at the end of the day, we have control over our own destiny. We do. And that's one of the main reasons I do what I do. As most of you know, I don't have to do a YouTube channel. I don't have to do a podcast. I retired in 2012. Fortunately, I made some good investments, so I never have to work a day again in my life if I don't choose to. I do this because I'm absolutely passionate about macro. I love talking about this stuff, but I'm trying to open up as many people's eyes as possible because I know that's where we win. That's how we win. I don't think we're not going to win by voting out Biden, because eventually we're just going to get some other knucklehead in there that's probably just as bad, if not worse. We're not going to win by, and I hate to say this, but it's so true. We're not going to win this battle by voting a different way or voting for different people. We're going to win this battle by coming together and making sure the politicians and the elite know that we will not stand for any more encroachments on our personal freedoms and liberty. And if they so choose to go down that path, then we obviously not going to get violent, but we are going to protest. We're going to go out and practice civil disobedience, just like the truckers did. And we're going to make a difference. And that's what they have to realize. At the end of the day, the politicians and the global elite, they are slaves to the masses. It is not vice versa. It's only vice versa if we choose it to be. So that's why I'm very optimistic. And again, that's why I do what I do, because there is light at the end of the tunnel if we can wake up enough people. And that's why I'm so encouraged by Rogan and Russell Brand and Shapiro, because the fact that they're talking about stuff that we were talking about, or we have been talking about since the beginning of this channel, that used to be just tinfoil hatter stuff, and now all of a sudden it's mainstream, that's something to get excited about. All right, guys, I'm going to head over to a meeting with our mastermind group, The Collective, and just want to remind everyone, if you're in Phoenix or if you don't know, Ken McElroy is doing a limitless event, Financial Freedom. I'm going to be speaking there next Friday morning. I'm going to be doing a panel discussion with two economists in the morning. And I think these economists are, I don't know their names, but they're economists with like the National Association of Realtors or something like that. And so they're going to be like a CNBC type of economist. So that could get interesting with me up there. Going back and forth with those guys. So we'll have a lot of fun. And I speak after the panel discussion. And of course, Kenny's there, Kim Kiyosaki, Robert Kiyosaki, Mark Victor Hansen, Brandon Turner, I believe the gentleman who started Bigger Pockets. So if you're a real estate investor, it's you got to go. And then, of course, Rebel Capital's live at the end of June. You can get your tickets there at rebelcapitalslive.com. All right, let's do some shout outs, guys. Who do we have with us today? Who is hanging out in the chat? I'll go down to the... We got Bloom in the house, Atlas, Mr. Pepper, Christopher, and was it Letitia? Yes, Letitia Kirwan, Frank Dudley, Jerry Faircloth, Chris Sauer. Oh boy. MX Oldtimer for Brap. RR in the house, Market Mania Canada in the house, Salvador Aguilar, Shame to Honor 144, Ralph Martinez, Cody Herr, Interglacial Optimist, ICU2, Matt Bittner, Tony G, Jack Wise, Joseph Gerard, Self Defense for Kids, M. Petrus, Phil Frost, Love Rammstein, Ghost. Rammstein's a great band, aren't they? AG47, Prepper or Pepper? Prepper, there we go. Randy Shackelford, GG, Jared Mason, Alexi Ramashkov, Ted O, Keto Man. Now everyone's chiming in here. Casey Sunshine, Eric Coyne, Chris Vazo, Hector Gonzalez, Bearded Heretic. All right, guys. Enjoy the rest of your afternoon and your weekend. As always, guys, make sure that we're standing up for freedom, liberty, free market capitalism. See you in the next video.
Thank you for listening to the Rebel Capitalist Show. For more content like this, check out the Rebel Capitalist blog at georgegammon.com or go to the George Gammon YouTube channel.